It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Somali-based militants claim responsibility for mass killing in Kenyan town. More Nigerians die in a new village attack. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility Monday for an attack on a Kenyan town Sunday that killed at least 48 people. A statement posted to a pro-Shabaab website said gunmen attacked hotels, police station, banks, and other public places in the coastal town of Impekatone filled with World Cup fans. Kenya's Interior Cabinet Secretary Joseph Lenku held a news conference Monday.
On Sunday the 15th June 2014 at about 9 p.m., a known number of armed militia attacked Impekatone and Kibaoni town in Lamu County. During the attack, 48 innocent lives were lost, over 20 vehicles burned down, and various properties destroyed. The security services were mobilized to respond to the attack, and after fierce exchange of fire, the bandits fled into Boni Forest.
He said security officers are pursuing the perpetrators and warned against attempts to incite public anger. In Impekatone, resident John Induritu said he's packing up and leaving because there is no semblance of security in the town. A lot of tension and people are scared. Mohammed Yusuf has more from Nairobi.
Kenyan officials and witnesses say the assailants attacked the town from every corner but targeted only men. Michael Yebei, who works with the Kenya Red Cross, says his response team found numerous bodies lying in the streets, some shot, others hacked to death.
The first thing we saw were bodies lying along the road.
One witness speaking to the local media says it took several hours for the police to respond to the attack.
There was some delay in terms of response, though we cannot blame it much on the police because they also never knew where to attack them from, but the situation went on for around 4 hours before they left for the outskirts of the town, where they also murdered some individuals before taking off.
The police say an investigation is underway to determine whether militants or a criminal gang had carried out the attack. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
In Washington Monday, U.S. State Department spokesperson Jen Psaki called the attack heinous and condemned it in the strongest terms.
There can be no place for appalling acts of violence such as this in any society. We continue to work with Kenya to address security in Kenya and the region. The U.S. Embassy already has restricted travel for U.S. government personnel to the Nairobi neighborhood and of Eastleigh and to all coastal counties prior to this. Travel to these areas for U.S. government personnel is limited to mission essential trips. The embassy continues to be open for normal operations. As you know, we evaluate day by day security and any changes that need to take place.
Al-Shabaab says the attack was in retaliation for the slaying of Muslim clerics in Mombasa, where several preachers have been gunned down in the past 2 years. The group blames security forces for the killings, an accusation Kenyan officials have denied. Officials in Nigeria say more than 20 people were killed when gunmen believed to be Boko Haram militants attacked a village in the country's northeast. Residents in Daku say gunmen surrounded the village market Sunday, firing indiscriminately. The violence is the latest to hit Nigeria's troubled northeast region. Militants are holding more than 200 schoolgirls they kidnapped from the nearby town of Chibok in mid-April. They also have killed thousands during their five-year insurgency to establish an Islamic state in the northeast of Nigeria, with attacks on schools, churches, mosques, bus stations, and other public places. Meanwhile, Human Rights Watch says the Nigerian military should not use Sri Lanka's defeat of Tamil separatists as a model in the fight against Boko Haram. It says more than 40,000 civilians died in the final months of that conflict. The multinational energy company Eaton Monday broke ground on a $12 million electronics plant in Morocco, perhaps a sign of increased foreign investment. The factory will turn out circuit breakers and other telecommunications equipment and deploy some 500 people. The United States opened its World Cup campaign Monday with a 2-1 win over Ghana in a Group G match. That lead held up until the 82nd minute when Andre Ayew got the equalizer for Ghana. The U.S. team scored in the 86th minute for the victory, avenging defeats at the hands of Ghana in the last two World Cups. Earlier, a fourth-ranked Portugal dropped to Germany 4-0. Iran and Nigeria played to a scoreless tie. I'm Victor Beatty reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Holy Africa, welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South African President Jacob Zuma delivers his first State of the Nation address today after his recent re-election.
Everybody else in South Africa is looking forward to the president of what will be the ANC's plan of action, both mid-term, short-term to a long-term, of what is it that we have to do to change the economy, given the challenges we have.
Zizi Kodwa is the spokesman for South Africa's ruling African National Congress. The UN says millions of people in conflicts are unable to get the aid they deserve due to lack of funding. Elderly Kenyans seek protection in the wake of abuse, and thousands receive agricultural assistance in the Central African Republic.
The aid program targets more than 30 villages in the west of the country and will give supplies to more than 13,000 people.
That's VOA correspondent Jennifer Lazuta in Dakar, Senegal. 28 Zimbabwean students get U.S. scholarships to study in the United States, and African fans at the FIFA World Cup cheer their teams on. Those stories, plus Mark Omar's Sports and Our Listener of the Day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South African President Jacob Zuma will deliver the State of the Nation address today, Tuesday, following his recent re-election. Zuma was hospitalized recently and underwent tests for exhaustion. African National Congress spokesman Zizi Kodwa says Mr. Zuma will outline steps that his administration will take to implement the party's agenda, which will include kick-starting the economy and creating about 6 million jobs. Kodwa tells reporter Peter Clarty that President Zuma will be energized during the delivery of the State of the Nation address after resting from intense campaigning in the run-up to the election.
Well, as you are aware, that we just came from a very successful and peaceful election in the country. Immediately after the elections, the president then formed a new government for the new administration, fifth administration. And the expectation, of course, is that immediately after, the president will then address the nation on what is called the State of the Nation, including outlining the priorities of his administration for the next term with regards to why would people voted the African National Congress, what are the priorities, what is the state of our economy, what is the state of the country in relation to jobs, in relation to houses, and so on. How are we going to deal with those issues? You would have seen in the past some few protests in South Africa of service delivery. The president would outline the plans of how we deal with those issues, issues around education and health.
The president appeared not to have felt well. He was admitted, tests were done and all that. Will he be fit to address the nation?
The officials of the African National Congress, from the president up to number six, the six of them, in fact, the entire leadership, which just came back from a very punishing and an exhaustive election campaign. This was the most demanding campaign of the African National Congress ever since 1994. And many of them, we took them, we drove them to the ground until the last drop. I mean, there was no rest since the first day we launched the campaign. We took a decision as a leadership that all our officials should take a break, because as we start now implementing the manifesto, because we won elections, as government wheels starting to roll, we need very energized leadership. We need very energized president. The Secretary General of the ANC was the first to take leave for about 10 to 15 days. The president was second. Firstly, he was given time off by his organization, the ANC, to go and rest so that he can be very energized when he addresses the nation in the State of the Nation address. Obviously, then he took an opportunity to go and do the test. We think that come Tuesday, when the president stands before the nation, he will be ready enough to be able to articulate. And I think that we are looking forward to the president. Everybody else in South Africa is looking forward to the president of what will be the ANC's plan of action, both mid-term, short-term to a long-term, of what is it that we have to do to change the economy, given the challenges we have.
The economy recently was at a standstill. People have expressed concern that jobs are not being created. Will the ANC have a specific plan in the president's anticipated speech?
At the core of our manifesto was the need to grow economy so that it creates more jobs. For example, we gave ourselves a target of 6 million jobs of the next 5 years of President Zuma's ANC administration.
Zize Kodwa is the spokesman for South Africa's ruling African National Congress. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Pretoria. The International Committee of the Red Cross has begun distributing seeds and farming equipment in the Central African Republic. The group says the aid is vital to the survival of families who fled rebel attacks and are now returning home to find their farms and granaries destroyed. Jennifer Lazuta has more from VOA's West Africa Bureau in Dakar.
The aid program targets more than 30 villages in the west of the country and will give supplies to more than 13,000 people. Tens of thousands of people have fled the area in recent months following clashes between armed rebel groups. Countrywide, more than 1 million have been displaced since the mostly Muslim Silica rebel group overthrew the president in March 2013, prompting retaliation by the mostly Christian anti-Balaka militia. Despite ongoing violence, many families have begun to return home, only to find they have nothing left. Jean-Francois Sengsu is the chief of the ICRC delegation in the CAR. He says the ICRC is working in partnership with the Central African Red Cross and bringing agricultural assistance to people in the western region who have been victims of attacks by armed groups since the end of last year. Sengsu says their fields were burned, their homes looted, so the ICRC decided to give them assistance to help them plant and cultivate new fields. The ICRC says each recipient family will receive stacks of beans, sesame, and corn seeds, as well as tools such as hoes. More than 2.5 million people are already in need of immediate humanitarian aid. Poor harvests in 2013, because of the conflict, left food stocks throughout the country nearly depleted. Food and Agricultural Organization has warned that about 95% of CAR communities say they will not have enough seeds for this year's planting season. Sengsu says this could increase the number of people facing hunger. He says that assistance is vital in helping those victims return to their homes and cultivate their destroyed fields. The hope is that in 4 or 5 months, the people will be able to harvest their own crops. Sengsu says that as families await the harvest, the ICRC will work with its partners to distribute regular food aid to both returnees and internally displaced persons throughout the country. Jennifer Lazuta for VOA News, Dakar.
A senior UN official says millions of people caught in crises around the world are unable to get the aid they need due to lack of funding. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The United Nations has appealed for a record $16.9 billion to assist 54 million people in 28 countries this year. Nearly half the year has passed, and only 30% of that money, or $5.2 billion, has been received. UN Humanitarian Chief Valerie Amos says people should do the math, and they will see the difficulties aid agencies face. While contributions are slow in coming, she says there is no let-up in humanitarian crises, which are expanding in scale and depth. She cites Syria, the Central African Republic, and South Sudan as the three top-level crises. She says Syria is the biggest of the three, with more than 9 million internally displaced people and nearly 3 million refugees in neighboring countries in need of help. Amos tells VOA it is still too soon to tell what impact the recent violence in Iraq and the takeover of the city of Mosul will have on humanitarian operations in Syria.
One of the border crossings that we have been looking at as a possibility of getting aid from Iraq into Syria is one of the border crossings that is now controlled by ISIS as a result of the recent action. But at the moment, we have a major concern about how we can deal with the huge amount of displacement that we've seen in the last few days, just as a result of the fighting in Mosul.
The United Nations estimates 500,000 people have fled Mosul, about 300,000 to Kurdistan. Meanwhile, Amos says urgently needed protection and basic relief for some 2.5 million men, women, and children in the Central African Republic is at risk. She says the situation is becoming more critical by the day in South Sudan, where 1.5 million people have been uprooted by violence in the past 6 months.
With the onset of the rains, cholera has broken out and malaria is taking its toll on children and on adults alike. Aid agencies have just released a new plan to help 3.8 million people in South Sudan by December with emergency health care, food, clean water, sanitation and shelter. There's no time to waste if we're to avoid a famine later in the year.
Amos says she is pleased a recent fundraiser in Oslo managed to raise $600 million for South Sudan. She says if access improves and funding continues, aid agencies can make a difference. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Batte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 17th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. The United States has approved $6 million in scholarships to 28 economically disadvantaged but academically gifted Zimbabwe students to study in the U.S. under the U.S. Achievers Program. Erwin Chifera of VOA Zimbabwe Program has details from Harare.
At a send-off ceremony for the 28, who are going to study at some of the top universities in America, U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton said the USA program has seen talented Zimbabweans excelling at some of the best universities in the world, adding the recipients will no doubt help develop their country upon return.
The long-term purpose of USAP is to build Zimbabwe and the positive connections between the United States and Zimbabwe. Now, I hope that you will all commit to that ideal and use your time in the U.S. to gain skills and develop plans that you can put to work back in Zimbabwe in the future.
All the students were grateful for making it under the USAP program, adding, without the U.S. Embassy Education Section's assistance, they would not have realized their dream of studying at some of the top universities in the world. Charity Bebe from Matabeleland and North, who is headed for Arizona State University, where she will study public health and women empowerment, tells Studio 7 she will come back to assist the disadvantaged women in her community.
Education for women, and most women, they're like the people who are vulnerable. So they need us. They need us to empower them and speak up for those women. So that's why I wanted to do gender empowerment and development. And then I promise I'm coming back, Zimbabwe, for you. To the women out there, I'm coming back. And this country is going to change for the better, definitely.
Bezum Pasiri, who was raised by a single parent, is excited. He says without USAP, university education would have been a pipe dream.
It's pretty exciting considering my financial situation. My dad passed away when I was in grade 3. So it was kind of hard for my mom to raise me, paying the boarding fees and stuff. So it's quite an achievement. I'm so excited. After I complete my studies, I plan on gaining experience, then come back to Zimbabwe to rebuild my country just because I want to study economics and computer science with specializations in software engineering. So I want to upgrade the software industry of Zimbabwe.
Tatenda Nyandoro, who had commenced economic studies at the University of Zimbabwe, since this program of choice is not offered locally, says USAP has enabled him to pursue his dream.
I'm so happy about it because my dream is now coming true. Since I'm now able to go for my program, which I really wanted, which is not offered here in Zimbabwe, I want to study performing arts.
Since the launch of the program 14 years ago, more than 1,200 Zimbabweans have completed their studies or are enrolled at American universities. Reporting from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
As the world's elderly population grows, many countries struggle to reduce violence against older people. In Nairobi, older Kenyans gather to call for a UN Convention on the Rights of Older People. Rupa Guganini has more from the Kenyan capital.
In Kilifi County along Kenya's coast, 41 older people accused of witchcraft have been murdered this year alone. 61 were killed in 2013. Local authorities say many more cases go unreported. A former long-distance truck driver living in the village of Kayogodoma, Kenga Charo, opened his home to those fleeing such accusations. He has sheltered more than 200 elderly victims of abuse. If you are older aging, you can be accused of being a witch, Charo says. Maybe a young man wants to sell your piece of land, but you do not want to sell it because it's family land. The young man will force you to sell, and if you do not, they will make an accusation. If they say you were a witch, you will be identified and definitely be killed. They will sell you out for just $200 or $400. Charo and dozens of other elderly Kenyans gathered Monday in Nairobi to demand that Kenya push for a UN convention focused on ending the violence against older men and women. They say existing human rights laws do not adequately include their vulnerable population. Principal Secretary of Kenya's Ministry of Labor, Ali Noor, addressed the crowd, pledging the continued support of the government to its older citizens. He noted an increase in Kenya's aged population, a demographic trend that is accompanied by rapid urbanization.
In particular, the increased movement of younger persons from rural to urban areas in search of employment has led to major challenges in family structures, resulting in the breakdown of the extended family support system to older persons in society, with its inbuilt traditional social protection systems.
Though the rights of elders are protected in the 2010 Kenyan Constitution, cases of elder abuse and neglect persist in the country. Erastus Maina is the director of Help Age Kenya, a civil society group serving older Kenyans.
Today, in a very special way, we are here because in our country, we are hearing and we have been hearing that older people are hunted, they are killed, they are isolated, they are discriminated.
In rural Kenya, it is often allegations of witchcraft that lead to such abuse. Maina believes lack of education perpetuates these beliefs.
The argument is people fall sick because they have been bewitched. There's evil. People do not fall sick because they are bewitched. They fall sick either because they are hungry, they are malnourished, they have malaria, or they are drinking contaminated water. But these are issues that those communities do not want to argue.
He wants the government to take a two-pronged approach to end the violence, by prosecuting the perpetrators and by addressing the widespread belief in witchcraft. Rupa Goganeni for VOA News, Nairobi.
The Brazil FIFA World Cup has drawn fewer football fans from Africa than the last World Cup in South Africa, but the African fans are still passionate in their support for their respective national teams. Scott Bob has this report from the FIFA Fan Fest Park on Copacabana Beach in Rio de Janeiro.
Copacabana Beach. African fans have gathered for the late night match between Ivory Coast and Japan. Things are not going well. Japan scores early and leads throughout much of the game. But in the second half, two goals, 2 minutes apart, turn the gloomy mood joyous. The Elephants of Ivory Coast hold on to win 2-1. They have boosted their chances to advance to the second round, says Marie Ngonya from Cameroon.
Well, tonight I'm really proud of the Elephants. They have made Africa proud. I hope they will go much further, and I'm rooting for them. Thank you, Côte d'Ivoire. I'm with you with all my heart.
Merci, je suis de tout cœur avec vous. Merci.
The team still has a lot of work to do, says Ivorian Jean-Jules Porquet from Abidjan.
At the beginning, we weren't very hopeful, but as we say in Côte d'Ivoire, discouraged is not worrying. Then, suddenly, we score and made it to the end, and now we enjoy the fruits of victory.
Despite the late hour, fans from other countries are here to root for Ivory Coast. African football has come a long way, says Daniel Ngozi, originally from Nigeria, here with his Canadian friend, Max.
I think it has improved a lot in terms of the technical ability of the individual players. That being said, I feel as if there needs to be a longer way to go in terms of getting a team to gel quicker that we see with other national teams, namely from Europe. There's something that has to change there.
Abu Sangote from Senegal thinks Africa's best chance to win the World Cup was 4 years ago in South Africa, but he thinks they still have a shot.
I think so because the African players are getting stronger and stronger. They've always had talent, but presently a lot of it. For me, Africa should be at the top. I don't think it's taken much.
The high cost of plane fares from Africa has limited the number of fans traveling to Brazil from the continent. But the African teams are well supported by fans from around the world. Scott Bob, VOA News, Rio de Janeiro.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the FIFA World Cup in Brazil. American man of the match Clint Dempsey and John Brooks scored in each half, while Andre Ayew replied for Ghana as the United States of America prevailed 2-1 over the Ghana Black Stars in a pulsating Group G encounter in Natal, northeast Brazil, on Monday. Earlier on in Salvador, attacking midfielder Thomas Muller scored the first hat-trick of the World Cup as Mats Hummels added a goal to ensure Germany outclassed Portugal 4-0. Consequently, Germany now top Group G, the United States is second, Ghana third, as Portugal languish at the bottom of the table. Meanwhile, although African champions Nigeria Super Eagles dominated much of the proceedings against Iran in their Group F encounter, the two sides settled for a scoreless draw in Curitiba on Monday. Nigeria's consolation is that industrious midfielder Mikel Obi was declared man of the match. As a result, Argentina lead Group F, Iran and Nigeria share a second spot, while Bosnia-Herzegovina are at the bottom of the table. Staying in Brazil, in Group H, Algeria take on Belgium in Belo Horizonte today, Tuesday. Striker Islam Slimani, who was a prolific scorer during their World Cup qualifying campaign, says the team aims to break new grounds by progressing beyond the group stage of the contest. Russia plays South Korea in Cuiaba in the other group tie. Finally, hosts Brazil tackle Mexico in Fortaleza in a Group A tie today, Tuesday. Having each triumphed in their opening match, whoever wins becomes the first side to qualify for the knockout phase at the World Cup. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Our listener mail for this Tuesday morning comes from S.A. Adewoye of Ibadan, Nigeria. He says, dear VOA, Boko Haram is evil, tribal, political, and diabolically religious group. The brains behind Boko Haram are the emirs of the north, as well as northern politicians. Boko Haram sponsors and supporters are also in the Nigerian armed forces and in both the Senate and House of Representatives. They are also in the president's cabinet. If we can get rid of Boko Haram supporters and sponsors, we will be able to rescue the kidnapped Chibok girls easily. Thank you, S.A. Adewoye of Ibadan, Nigeria, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for an attack on a Kenya town that killed at least 48 people. A statement posted to a pro-Shabaab website says gunmen attacked hotels, police stations, banks, and other public places in the coastal town of Mpaketoni. Some of those killed had gathered to watch the Football World Cup. That's it for this Tuesday, June 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Owoman, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Botti in Washington, saying, have a nice day, Africa.
What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks. Get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah. Now there is a youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I feel like the problem is that once the funds are sent to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.